As the partial government shutdown continues, Congress remains at an impasse. The House has passed bipartisan bills that would reopen the government, but Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has yet to bring any of those bills to the floor. The Senate may vote on spending bills later this week, but at this point, there's no end to the shutdown in sight. To talk more about what's happening in Washington, 90.5 WESA's Lucy Perkins spoke with Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey. She started by asking the Republican lawmaker what he makes of the latest developments.
Unfortunate doesn't even begin to capture. It's very frustrating. But while there's plenty of blame to go around, I really think that the fundamental problem here has been the unwillingness of Speaker Pelosi to engage in negotiations at all. It's always been clear to me that the president was open to negotiating the dollar amount. His initial position was $5.7 billion for physical border security. And her position was zero and she won't negotiate. And that's not reasonable.
There was a rally just outside of Pittsburgh at the Pittsburgh International Airport on Friday to show support for the TSA officers who are working without a paycheck. And one thing that I heard a lot from people was that they said, you know, border security is important, but we need a paycheck. What do you make of the idea of reopening the government and then talking about a border wall?
Well, there's one problem with that, right? The president asked Speaker Pelosi point blank. He asked her, if we reopen the government, as you're demanding, if we do that, and then we begin negotiations, will you consider some funding for some physical border security then? And her answer was no. So what have we accomplished? You know, we're not going to get the border security piece of this, which is important, frankly, to most Americans. You know, I should point out, nobody's asking for a 2,000-mile-long continuous wall. We already have several hundred miles of the 2,000-mile border protected by physical barriers, and the Customs and Border Patrol folks tell us that we really should have some more in certain places. There are places where you don't need a border wall. If you've got mountainous terrain, you've got rivers, you have natural barriers. But there are other areas where maybe you have fairly dense population. You know, we've got towns that kind of run right up to the border on both sides or on either side. Well, it becomes very easy for someone to slip across the border and, you know, hide down an alley and disappear if there are no physical barriers in a location like that. For Speaker Pelosi to say it's immoral, it's ridiculous. It's obviously just a political motivation. So we're trying to break this impasse, break through this political mindset that some on the other side have, and that's what I'm hoping we can do this week.
In the Senate, just before Christmas, the Senate passed a continuing resolution to keep the government open, only to find out that President Trump wanted that legislation to include $5 billion for his wall. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell won't bring a bill like that to the floor now if the president doesn't announce that he supports it. And you have said in the past that Congress is elected separately from the president. Congress does not report to him. If Congress is an independent branch of government, how do you see Senator McConnell's decision to do this?
You know, Senator McConnell can make his decisions. He's the leader. My own view is we've got a bill that's going to be on the floor later this week if the Democrats allow us to take it up. I hope they will. I think it should be open to amendment. And those amendments could change it dramatically. I would like to include my provision, for instance, that would preclude future shutdowns. The president may or may not agree with those things, but the Senate should work its will.
I want to talk about gun control reform. You have backed some gun control measures in the past and indicated that you would be interested in doing something like that again after the Tree of Life shooting in October. I'm curious what the chances are of such legislation being more successful in 2019. What would it take for that sort of legislation to pass?
Well, let me be specific about what we're talking about here, because I'm a big believer in the Second Amendment. I'm a gun owner. I think the Second Amendment is a very, very important and individual right. Mm-hmm. My view has always been that that is not in conflict with my equally strongly held view that it is reasonable for us to do background checks on purchases, certainly commercial gun sales, because some people in our society don't have the right to the Second Amendment, specifically violent criminals who have demonstrated they don't deserve to have that right, people who are dangerously mentally ill. It is completely reasonable for us to prevent those people from having firearms. And so we need to have a mechanism for determining whether a person is in one of those two categories. The background check is the mechanism we've used, But there are loopholes. There are gaping holes in it. Sales at gun show on a large scale that really are equivalent to a commercial operation, those are not subject. Long gun sales in Pennsylvania are not subject to a background check. In other states, even handguns are not. Likewise, sales over the internet are not always subject to background checks. So my view is if there's commercial sales involved, there ought to be a background check. That's the legislation that I introduced with Senator Manchin. What are the prospects in 2019? The prospects have changed, perhaps, because the House has switched control. So I'm not happy about the fact that the House has changed control. I'm a Republican. I prefer Republican control. But the silver lining in that cloud, from my point of view, is that now we have a House that can pass broader background check legislation. I think they will do that. I think they will send it to the Senate. And if we can get a few more Republicans to take my view, which is that expanding background checks does not infringe on the rights of law-abiding citizens, then maybe we've got a shot at doing something here.
You have said that tariffs, specifically President Trump's tariffs on steel and aluminum, are just taxes that end up hurting American consumers. Do you think that we've been able to see the effect of his tariffs yet? Are they working? Are they doing what the president intended?
Have we seen the effects? Absolutely. I have a big stack on my desk of letters from Pennsylvania employers who have been very adversely affected by the tariffs. So the president's tariffs help you if you're in the business of making steel. But if you're one of the far more people who are employed in a company that uses steel and then you fabricate something or you convert it into another kind of steel or you change its form or shape, that's a much, much bigger industry in Pennsylvania and throughout America, and those folks are already being hurt. There is some danger that many of them will lose their jobs. So the adverse effect is absolutely happening. And, you know, the president's purpose in this was to pressure other countries, and specifically Canada and Mexico, to negotiate a new trade agreement. Well, for better or for worse, the Canadians and the Mexicans have done that. They've agreed to a new trade agreement. And the administration was supposed to lift these tariffs when an agreement was reached. It has been reached, and they still haven't lifted the tariffs. So it's frustrating to me, and it's harmful. And it's simply a factual matter that a tariff is a tax on American consumers. The president likes to brag about how many billions of dollars are coming into the Treasury. Well, they're all coming out of American wallets.
You have had some tough words for Saudi Arabia after the death of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. I'm curious, what do you think should be done to call that country's leadership to account, and what is likely to happen?
I think this administration didn't handle that situation well. You know, unfortunately, it's true there are many regimes around the world that commit atrocities, including murdering some of their own people, including murdering their dissidents. That doesn't make it okay, and it certainly doesn't make it okay for our allies. We do expect more from our allies, and Saudi Arabia has been an ally. So I think there are a variety of ways we can send the message to the Saudi government that that is completely unacceptable. A temporary suspension of weapons sales, for instance, would be just one of many ways that we could convey that message. It's difficult because there's a reason that we are allied with Saudi Arabia, and it's because our two countries share common security interests. And Saudi Arabia is the most significant counterweight to Iran in the Middle East. And Iran is extremely hostile to the United States and our interests. But it's problematic when their government goes off the rails, as they did in the case of the assassination of Khashoggi. So I think we need to strike the right balance. It is not the case that we should suddenly no longer consider this country, Saudi Arabia, to be an ally. But it is the case that we need to send a very strong message to their leadership that that behavior was completely unacceptable.
You ran in 2016 as a check on President Trump. Obviously, you know, you are critical of the way that the administration handled the death of Khashoggi. Are there other examples that point to your leadership as a check on the president?
Yeah, I think there are. I mean, that example is one. I was very outspoken and critical of the president's decision to suddenly withdraw from Syria. I think that's destabilizing. I have been probably the most outspoken Republican opponent of the president's tariff policy and leading efforts to push back on that in a variety of ways. So, you know, look, when the president pursues policies that I agree with, then I'm going to support the president. When he does things I disagree with, I've pushed back very aggressively. I don't think it's my job to monitor and play running commentary on the president's Twitter feed, but it is my responsibility to stand up for Pennsylvania. And so when the president and I disagree, on substantive policy matters, I'll say so, and I have.
Senator Toomey, thank you so much for speaking with me. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for having me.